Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. This is another one of our Urbanite Radio stories, and one I've been looking forward to. I was going to say actually one, but I look forward to a lot of them, but I was really looking forward to this one. You've heard, not that I'm identifying this incredible woman through her husband, but I'm just about to say she gets connections. Her husband appears in the show a great deal. He's Dr. Lester Spence from Johns Hopkins University, rising young political science star in America. You hear him on Tell Me More all the time. But Sean Spence is her own person in her own right. Besides being a writer, a mother of five, a comedian, brilliant, educated, conflicted about everything in the world like the rest of us. And you can see.
You got to put that in there. You got to put that in there.
Sean Spence, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I actually realized that you are real probably about a week ago as I hear you on the radio. I hear my husband talking to you on the phone, and we had never met.
And I said, it's wild that we never met.
Isn't it unbelievable? And I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
This is great. I was looking forward to this. 410-319-8888. Let me slow that down. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can watch us live now by clicking on steinershow.org. We're streaming, which is good. Streaming is a good thing. You can see us live on the air. You can see the lovely Sean Spence here, and even me. 410-319-8888. So, Sean, this is an interesting piece that you wrote, and what motivated you to write it? Why did you decide to do this piece?
It actually is a story that was initiated by the Urbanite editor. And we were talking casually at a comedy show, and we were just talking about the struggles of family. Most people think that family looks a certain way, and we often discuss how it looks traditionally, but we don't discuss sort of the behind-the-scene nuances of family, the choices that we have to make. Specifically, should one of the spouses or one of the partners stay at home? Mm-hmm. Should they both work? How do you deal with daycare? How do you deal with the financial struggles if there's only one income? How do you deal with it with their two incomes, right? How do you deal with a large family? Five children in this day and age is pretty
That's
much
a lot
like
of kids.
10,
yeah.
12, you know? So it feels like 10 or 12, too, sometimes. So
yeah, they range from 16 to
6.
6, right?
Yes. Yes, 16 to 6. And so, you know, Greg really challenged me to put it in writing. And it was initially a very difficult piece. It was very difficult to really share some very personal struggles in a public forum. I've already gotten criticism from my family.
Have you now?
Absolutely, because that's important. Because we are, especially I think as just African Americans, that whole airing dirty laundry, keeping things to yourself.
Right.
I actually thought that the laundry was pretty clean.
I thought so too. There's not a lot of stains in this laundry.
Not a lot of stains in the laundry. I think it's just some harsh truth that we have to accept.
Right.
And I realized after writing it, Mark, that I've gotten so many responses. Thank you so much for everybody who's read this article on Facebook, friends, family, college friends, and really gave me some real encouragement. Because we've had to make some really tough choices in today's economy, in today's world. And so I'm glad that I was able to sort of push through it. Greg says he read it and he said, try this. So I'm very proud of the piece, and I'm glad that it's had the impact that it's had.
Very well done. I mean, the you begin the story a lot. We interviewed Isabel Wilkerson just a few weeks back, her book, Warmth of Other Suns. Incredible story about the African-American diaspora going from the South to the North and how it was like any immigrant families in America, any immigrants who came to America from Poland, Russia, wherever people came from, they can come to this country. The same desires, the same patterns, want their kids to go to college, of working hard, finding jobs. That was That was my mic I just hit.
We're going to have fun today. We're going to have fun, people. Call in.
And that was your family.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to Detroit from the South.
Yes, that was my family. My maternal family came from Mississippi to Detroit. And my grandparents were really the landing place. Their home, my grandfather deliberately bought a home with four small flats. It was called a four-family flat. So that his siblings, as well as my grandmother's siblings, could have a place to stay. As they graduated from high school, left the military, or returned home from the military, mm-hmm. that they would not have to return to the very hostile and unsafe environment that existed during Jim Crow in Mississippi.
That's pretty phenomenal itself, that your father bought a home and you write about how family just kept coming through. And you even questioned him once about why.
Yeah, you
why
know.
Why do we live like this?
Yes, my grand. It's funny because even now, especially through Facebook, and I always talk about Facebook because it really does show how many aunts and uncles and cousins I really have, because everyone who came from Mississippi, who were even neighbors, who knew my grandparents, were able to live in the house. My grandfather worked for Ford. My uncle worked for Chrysler, and my other uncle worked for GM. To be quite honest, each of them worked for the big three, and each of them worked at getting other family members jobs in those plants to help sustain themselves. And once they were able to sustain themselves, they bought houses. And believe it or not, they bought houses very close.
To each other.
Right, very close to each other. So we all kind of had our own sort of North Mississippi experience in Detroit. We cooked together. We ate together. We grieved together. I mean, I went to funerals. I tell people all the time, I've been to so many funerals, and I just remembered it was somehow related to me, but they weren't blood relatives.
So, right. It's all family.
It's all family.
I mean, the when you talk about the auto plants, I know that the auto plants were this incredible liberating factor for African Americans coming from the South and North, places like Detroit, the entry into the middle class, the entry into a way of sustaining your family, working hard in shift work at the plant, but being able to take care of your family.
Yes, it was, you know, it's funny because I have yet to drive a non-Ford or GM or Chrysler car.
Consciously. And
consciously. Uh-huh. My sister purchased a Toyota about, I guess maybe 10 years ago. And I think my family didn't talk to her for about 2 weeks.
Get out.
I mean, I'm so serious. It's so real because, you know, it was such a foundation of who we are. I mean, I tell people all the time, because my grandfather worked for Ford and I was the oldest grandchild, I knew how to change a tire. I knew how to change, you know, change the oil. I know what a carburetor is, a catalytic converter. So all these things that really meant something to my grandfather. And it was really important that we valued what he did and valued the contribution that he made, not just to my mom and her siblings, but to us, because it was really a multi-generational relationship that we had, because he was the first, and I say my grandparents, but my grandfather worked while my grandmother stayed at home. And so my grandfather really made a real emphasis on legacy and mm-hmm. on extended family. That was very big for us.
And part of that that legacy was the expectations they had of you, who, as you wrote, started reading at 2 years old, and you were supposed to be the golden girl.
Yes, I was the golden child. I was the golden ticket, as they say.
Golden ticket, that was the
factory.
Word.
Golden yes. And I did. I was the first person in my family to graduate from college, and that was a very exciting time. I'll never forget my uncle, who has since passed away, how he cut his hair. He was very excited about growing his hair long as he got older. You know, it was kind of hip, right? But my grandmother said, could you please cut your hair for her graduation? And he didn't cut it all off, Mark, but he did. He trimmed his hair and he put on every piece of University of Michigan gear he could find. I mean, he had on
great.
A vest and he had on a tie, and because my family is very proud. And honestly, my college graduation might as well have been a wedding, because I had so many of my family and extended family that celebrated with me when I graduated from college. It was a big deal.
And so then in some ways that's where the conflict began.
Absolutely.
Inside the family.
Yeah, inside the family, because I had great dreams of being a teacher, and then after
a lawyer even.
Yes, a teacher, then a lawyer. I was going to teach first, get established as a teacher because I like teaching, and then go to law school. And something happened. You know, I think it was my husband. No, I don't blame that. but I mean, we got married and we had a situation different than any of my other family members prior, is that we lived an hour away from our parents. And when my daughter was in childcare while I worked, and she cried every single day.
When you dropped her off at childcare?
When I dropped her off at childcare.
That's so hard.
And
that's hard.
I wanted to say I didn't care. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say that it didn't matter. But after about two or three weeks. And all the other parents would tell me, that must be your daughter. I mean, you know, I really felt bad. I felt guilty about it. And what happened was is that I really struggled because I had never been in daycare. My grandparents took care of us. And I liked the daycare. We had done the research. But what were we doing when she was crying all the time? And so I struggled initially. And then we also were faced with the economic choice, because at that time, with just an undergraduate degree, I wasn't making a lot of money. We lived in a college town. Child care was very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so we had to have a very different conversation, not just that she didn't like it, but the fact that we probably couldn't afford it. And so me bringing her home was a combination of those two things. And then I got into teacher mode because I had to prove something. So she had to learn everything and all of that stuff. And I realized that I actually liked it. I liked being involved, knowing where she was. I liked that I didn't have to run all over town trying to get her to different activities. And really, I realized that this was just going to be a different experience. But I honestly thought, Mark, for some time that it was going to be temporary. That it was going to be, my husband was in
graduate school
at the time. And I just figured as soon as he would be done with graduate school, you know, we'd go back to the way we thought it was going to be. I was going to be working, or I was going to go back to law school. And shortly after he graduated, by that time we had three children. Now that's a lot of math, I know, but it was over time.
Three children.
We had three children. And my parents and my in-laws, they helped out so much. But again, they also were still working. We have young parents. They were still working. And they wanted to relax over the weekends as well. And so we did have some family support, but an hour drive is a lot, you know, hour one way. So we moved to St. Louis. And that's really when I sort of stuck my heels in the ground and realized that I'm probably going to be a stay-at-home mom for a while, because I didn't know anybody in St. Louis. On top of the fact I hated it.
You didn't like St. Louis?
I didn't like St. Louis at all. No offense to anyone living in St. Louis. it was just very different. It was very different. It was a much more parochial town, very conservative, and it was very closed. If you weren't from St. Louis, then pretty much you didn't really get invited to the shindigs. Mm-hmm. And people didn't invite you places. People didn't invite you for play dates. And so it was very hard socially to establish myself and also take care of the house. So I ended up taking care of the house.
Folks, we're talking with Shawn Spence. She wrote this piece in this month's Urbanite. This is one of our Urbanite radio stories. And the story is called Tending the Family Tree. And it's a story I think many of us think about, go through, live through. How do we take care of families? How do we take care of our children? What happens when we make these sacrifices saying only one of us will work, even though in the state economy, our husband's a college professor, that's not a ton of money, not in the beginning of this
yes,
work.
Yes, people don't understand that. That's very important to emphasize. It's not a ton of money.
And you make these choices, and you homeschooled your children.
Yes.
That's a huge piece. You homeschooled your children.
Yes.
It's almost like a throwaway line in the story, but you homeschooled your children.
Yeah, you know, we lived in Baltimore City. Oh, here we go, right?
Go ahead and call 410-319-8888.
Okay, yeah, call in, because it's going to start.
410-319-8888. Tell us your own stories along the way.
Yes, please. We lived in Baltimore City, and my husband and I were educated. Well, I was educated in public school, actually. At some point in time, even my husband was in private school, in high school.
I met his father, who was an auto worker, who's how they sacrificed to put him through that.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And his brother as well. But I was educated in public school. We're very pro-public school. And we did send our children to Baltimore City schools for about a month and a half. And I'll just tell you two experiences that we had. And the educator came to me, who had my son at the time, and said, you know, I feel really bad telling you this, but I have 31 kids in my class. And your son is already reading, and I can't help him.
Mm.
He is bored. I spend more time dealing with the discipline problems in the class than I am teaching. I didn't get a TA due to budget cuts, and I am going to ask you to consider homeschooling him.
The teacher said that.
The teacher And she said, I've met you. I've talked with you. I know your husband's professor. I'm assuming you're educated as well. I might have mentioned to her that I was a trained teacher. And she said, I will help you find the resources, but your son is not getting anything here.
Wow.
Now, that was the first experience. In the same school, my daughter brought home a spelling list.
This is the oldest daughter?
This is the oldest daughter.
Who's 16 now?
Yes, who's 16 now. And she brought home a spelling list, and there was an error. And I said, oh, you copied this wrong. She says, no, I paid very close attention. She wears glasses. She sits in the front. And she says, I wrote it the way the teacher said. I said, no, this is wrong. And so she changed it, and she took the test, and the teacher marked it wrong when it was spelled correctly.
Do you remember what the word was?
Oh, I used to, Mark.
I used to
remember this word because I used to tell the story over and over, and now I've just kind of blocked it.
That's right.
And I said, well, I'm going to have to talk to the teacher because my daughter was like, oh, don't say anything. Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Hate that. They hate
oh, my
that.
God.
Don't talk to my teacher, please.
Don't talk to my teacher. You're going to cause some drama. So I waited a little bit, and then she had a math problem. Now, this I remember. And it was less than, greater than, equal. And the question was, is 0.5 less than, greater than, equal than 0.5? And she put less than.
The teacher did?
No, my daughter.
Your daughter did, right.
And I said, well, why did you say that? She said, because that's what the teacher said. I said, no, she could not have possibly said that because they're equal.
They're equal.
They're equal. And so at that time, I had a conference with the teacher.
And what did the teacher say?
And the teacher said, and you know, I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of calls. And the teacher says, look, I've had 3 strokes. I have 1 more year before I can retire. And I don't want to be bothered with all of these details. Your daughter's doing great in the class. She doesn't cause problems. So don't you come in here causing problems for me. Let me do my job and get out of here.
Take your commitment 6 days and go home, Miss Teacher.
Okay. And she was a doctor. That was her title. She was, I'm not going to say her last name, but she was a doctor in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, I felt like my hands were tied. I was livid. My husband and I looked at Catholic schools. We looked at Lutheran schools because Lutheran schools, you know, tend to be more affordable. We looked at a variety of options, and any number times 3 is too much.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. We still had the babies. We still had 2 that were not school age at that time. And we had to make an executive decision. And so what I said was that I'm not going to risk them not getting what they need educationally. Socially, because my son spent more time in kindergarten with his head down than he did learning anything. I'm not going to make that big of a sacrifice, so I'm going to pull him out. And so in October, I pulled him out. I had done the research. I had looked and see what the state laws were, all that good stuff. And I pulled him out. And I'll be honest with you, I really enjoyed it because I was really able to engage them in areas that schools aren't able to. Not just character, integrity, but also service, citizenship, the politics of the world. I mean, they did a photo essay during Hurricane Katrina that ended up being on the cover of a sociology journal.
Mm.
They actually had done the research and they took pictures of how they felt about Hurricane Katrina. That's how they learned about the weather. I combined the weather. I combined politics, economics, all in that particular study. I love the idea of being able to engage them in their strengths. And so I have a writer, I have one that's a lot more analytical, I have one that likes math. And so we were able to really play to those strengths in homeschooling as well.
Folks, join us here. We want to hear your stories. Shawn Spencer with us. She's a comedian. Been on. When's your next show?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be at Magoobies on Wednesday. Magoobies is on Deerco Road in Timonium. I'll be there Wednesday. And I'll be at the Comedy Factory in Baltimore on Light Street Saturday at 11 p.m. I have free tickets for the show at the Comedy Factory.
I like that.
Free tickets. Everybody in the studio, come on down.
410-319-8888. Maybe if you call, you might get a free ticket. You never know. Yeah. 410-319-8888. We do want to hear your stories. We want to hear your thoughts about what it's like to struggle on your own, your confrontations or or negotiations, discussions with your children's teachers, what they're learning or not learning in the schools. Maybe many of you are homeschoolers. Maybe you take care of your children and teach them at home. 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Sean Spence, mother of five, was going to be a lawyer, was going to be a teacher, and was on her way to graduate school on her own, but decided with her husband to raise these five children, living on one salary. And it's tough in America to do those kinds of things, but people do them. And I'm curious about your thoughts about that, your own sacrifices in this world when it comes to that. What we're willing to sacrifice for our children, what we're willing to do, and how we can make a living, how we live on just a little bit of money. And we did a series of programs here not long ago on frugality as a way of life in some ways. And you can be frugal and have a good time and enjoy your life and your family. We don't have to go off and spend a ton of money all the time on everything in the world. So join us for this Urbanite Radio story. Sean Spence is with us. 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones. Ms. Spence.
Okay.
Mrs. Spence, whatever you want to be. Comedian Spence. Karen in Howard County, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. It's so wonderful, Ms. Spence, to hear about the background and the stories, especially with the education of your children. I work in Baltimore City, and I live in Howard County. And the biggest issue that I've had was just there's such a difference in the school system. And just in general, I struggle with the students in the city. And then when I come home with my children, I find that they're doing things. They're young. They're doing things that they're young. They're like first grade. They're doing things that these fifth graders are really struggling with. And it just breaks my heart. I just think that the things that you've done with your children, these are the kind of things that not just me, parents do in the community here.
Right.
It may be resources and things, other things available. But I think it's just really wonderful to know that, you know, that we're sort of, I'm not sort of in this box when I'm just telling people about, here's what you could do with your child, here's what you can do. And it's just a wonderful thing, and I can't wait to come out and see your show.
Oh, aren't you wonderful? Thank you so much, Karen. I got to tell you that I get into a lot of conversations with people regarding homeschooling, especially people who don't have the financial resources, people who feel that they're not educated enough, single parents. And what I say to them is that homeschooling is a continuum. It is not something that you have to do full time all of the time if you can't, because it is something that a lot of people cannot do. What I say to people is that you can incorporate, home is where children learned everything first. Walk, talk, breathe, their manners, everything they learned. So we should be able to make homeschooling the same even as they get older. We have one TV that's in the article, and my mom has tried so hard to get us to have more than one, because we should be allowed to watch things and the kids should be allowed to watch something else. But no, you know what? When the TV is off, it's off for everybody. And we have conversations and we play nerdy games like Blockus, and you know, everybody's going, what's Blockus? We play a lot of games, and we really try to engage the children, and we ask them simple questions like, what's going on with you? I think a lot of children don't even have the space to deal with emotional, not just academic challenges, but emotional challenges. Our youngest daughter started wearing glasses. She lost her glasses several times. I couldn't figure out what it was. And she said that she was being teased. But it was only because I sat down with her every single day. What's going on with you? How are things going? And yep, she's great in school, but she was still having issues emotionally and socially as well. I think we just need to take some time out from our busy lives. I'm not anti-TV, but I don't watch it. Don't tell anyone.
I understand.
Karen.
Amen.
Because I realize that all of the good shows happened when the kids were awake. And, you know, the 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock hours. And so I just cut it, because I can better yet TiVo it and watch it on the weekends, or watch it late at night or early in the morning and spend that quality time with them.
Join us here, 410-319-8888. Cecilia, you are our next caller up. We have to take a break, Cecilia, so please don't go away. We want to hear your thoughts about the teacher that Sean Spence. is part of our Urbanite Radio Stories series because she wrote this piece, Tending the Family Tree, in this month's Urbanite. 410-319-8888. Give us your stories about your children, about your struggles to survive with on one salary, on half a salary, even on two salaries in raising children in this world, and what lessons we can learn from one another with all of this. I remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Come right to Cecilia, our next caller up. As soon as we return, stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're here with Sean. There it is. I just lost my head. Not my head, but something like that. I lost that a long time ago. It's a twist in the headphones.
Who is the comedian here? Goodness gracious.
And it's called Tending the Family Tree, Sean Spence, in this month's Urbanite. 410-319-8888. Writer, comedian, wife, mother of five, brilliant intellectual woman in her own right. I'll start teasing her husband, Lester, that he needed a PhD to show how smart he was. She doesn't need one. Sorry, Lester. I love Lester.
I know you do.
410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow@gmail.com. On the way to Cecilia, our next caller, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Credit unions, your money stays here. 410-319-8888. Cecilia, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you for taking my call. I'm fine. When you talked about the teacher suggesting that you take your child out of school, I had a similar experience when I took my child to Baltimore City Public School in the kindergarten. And her teacher said to me, you need to get her out of here because she needs to go to private school. You know, she's ready to read. She knows where she lives. These kids can't read. They can't do anything. And I'm spending much of my time doing discipline, and she's getting lost, and she's bored, and don't bring her back here. And I had never even considered private school or anything, and she recommended somewhere for me to go and everything. Mm. And I did make that decision. It was a sacrifice for us, but she's now 18 and on her way up in the college application process, and it was a good choice, but it was a challenging choice. But I knew we had no other option because I wanted her to learn certain things, too, like you said, about your children, and I didn't want to risk her not getting a quality education. But it was her kindergarten teacher that made the recommendation that we leave.
It's a sad commentary on the state of some of our public schools and some of the teachers in our public school system.
It is.
Not all schools, not all teachers by a long shot. But
yes, I'm proud of you. I know it was a sacrifice. I know it is challenging. And I just encourage people to realize that education really matters. I mean, when I was growing up, that's all that mattered. I mean, my grandfather we only had two books in the house. I actually wrote this as part of my memoir. We only had two books in the house, and it was the Bible and the dictionary. And we used to always have to read from both growing up. And my grandfather would come up with these words that to this day, I can't even, I don't even use them now, Cecilia, but I tell you, I remember anthropologistine, and it is no longer in the dictionary, but it was actually a word. And I'll never forget it because I remember my grandfather had to write it on two sheets of paper. You know, he had to put the piece of paper together and write it across. And those are the things that last. I mean, my grandfather has, you know, since been passed away in 1982, but I remember that it was so poignant in my life that we could turn we like the Steelers, no offense to the Ravens. It was in 78, okay? But, you know, we would watch football, and then we cut the football game off, and we would read the dictionary in the Bible.
Cecilia, thanks so much. There's a lot of people calling in. Let's get to the phone calls. And I think that's part of what we forget, too, is that people who came up from the South, black folks who came from the South to the North and were denied education in the South, living under the lash of segregation, literal and figurative lash of segregation, wanted so much more for their children. And what that generation did, and what we, some people in our generations, mine's a little older than your generation, but that's okay. In our generations, that span this little piece of time.
They can't tell that on the radio,
no,
Mark.
They can't
tell.
I know. But it, pardon me, is that raising children is about sacrifice. It's about making sacrifices for your kids. I mean, that's what we do to ensure the next generation moves ahead. Your thoughts? 410-319-8888. I think it's Che in the Sea Pleasant. You're on the air.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi, Che, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
All right, and you? I'm a friend. I'm sure she knows a comedic friend of Sean Mason Spence.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. I know I was hearing you all on the radio talk about, what, education?
Uh-huh.
And as you can tell, I probably grew up in the public system area. But, I mean, I think when I was also hearing y'all talk about church, too, church has been lost in the communities and the housing. And, far, you know, that used to be the place when I grew up, that was a place to go to. Like, my grandmother, parents control stuff, whereas now they let the kids control stuff, you know what I'm saying? Whereas, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't go to church, I couldn't go outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to go to church, you know. But then, when, you know, you always realized the church was just family. As you got older, you know, you go out in the street, you go out in the world, you try to experience, you know, life, you make bad, you know, decisions, wrong turns, but you always knew you can come back to church and, you know, regroup and get your life and your mind frame together. Sean and I were talking earlier about, you know, people's upbringings and how people are. And I just want to send a shout out to Sean, and I'm proud of her, you know, for all the stuff
she's
done, the motivation that she has for, you know, not just women alone, but people, you know, all human beings. You know, people can learn from people no matter where it's directed towards women or men or whatever. We can all learn from each other. And she's doing her part in, you know, in a spiritual way as well. So, you know, I really commend Sean on her work, and I'm proud to know her and be a friend of hers, you know. And she made me feel kind of stupid sometimes when I talk to her. I'd be like, dang, what is my IQ for real?
Stop it. I don't do that. I mean,
yeah, I'd be talking to Sean. I was like, my IQ is the calorie of a Tic Tac. I'm like,
It's just not that bad. It's not that bad. Thank you so much, Chan.
Thank you, Che.
I mean, I think what you said, I talk about in the article as well. I mean, family was our physical strength. And I shouldn't say was. Family's our physical strength. God is our spiritual strength. And education is really the strength for our future. It was really where we're going for our next level, our legacy, our next generation. You're right. My grandfather was a deacon in the church, and I remember spending at least 3 or 4 days in church, and it was not just service. We cleaned the church with him. Mm-hmm. When people were sick and my grandfather visited them, we would visit, or we would have to make cards, or we would have to make sure that the food was served with the different services. It was really a part, as I talked about earlier, we learned humility. We learned citizenship. And I'll be honest, we learned how to treat our elders, because there were just some things you could not say or do. And it didn't matter if they were your blood relative. If I was on a bus, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she was on a bus, and a young woman was using so much profanity, she got offended, and she asked her just to calm it down. And the young woman basically caught a case. Well, when I was growing up, it didn't matter if you knew that person or not. It didn't matter who that person was in your life. It was, they were an adult. You were a child. There's a certain amount of reverence that comes with that.
I mean, even, let me go back to the phones here, but even on the toughest corners 40 years ago or so, people would watch what they would say around women. Not that I believe in this men-women things being so different, but
right.
But with respect for people who were older, mm-hmm. toughest boys who were slinging stuff and doing what they were doing in the corner would help somebody who was older all across the street. Mm-hmm. It's just weird that kind of, even that, those courtesies have been kind of lost. And we can put them back in.
Mm-hmm.
If we put them back in our children, we can put them back in the world.
Exactly.
410-319-8888. Gene in Annapolis, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Gene. Welcome.
As a prelude, let me say, I was a fifth grade student in 1957 in the Philadelphia public schools,
uh-huh.
going through the culture shock of being transferred into public school and seeing my first report card because they didn't have them in the private school I was in. And my parents, who were civil rights activists who Mark knows of, and my mother went to Antioch College, and I had a teacher who was making math mistakes on the blackboard, and when I corrected her, and then when we had to write 100 times, I will not talk back to the teacher. My mother came into the school to talk with that teacher and explain that the teacher was teaching stuff wrong. That teacher was a very young new teacher in the school system, and a year later she committed suicide. And so I remember that to this day. I remember her name because it was so stunning that she wanted to teach. She was burdened with a class of, at that time, we had about 48 children in a class, and it was overwhelming to her.
Wow, I'm really sorry to hear that.
I always think about it. It's 50 years ago.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I think what you said though was key is that your parent supported you. I think a lot of times our children don't feel like the parents are going to support them. And I'm not saying necessarily in bad behavior.
Oh, it was a fundamental. It made a fundamental impact on me as a child. That my mother went in and I was there, and she said that, explained to the teacher that the kid was right, that she was teaching fractions wrong, and doing graphs wrong, and it was amazing, and that goes back to who my parents were.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and Jean, that's important.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you're part of the show. Appreciate the story. 410-319-8888, and Jill, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Jill, you're on the air. Is this Jill?
Joe?
Yeah.
Okay, how you doing?
I'm sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Okay.
It was Jill on my screen, but you can be Joe on the air. That's okay with
me. All right, I heard the comment that says this, you talked about this is an era of beating up on the teacher, and you know, with the contracts and all that kind of foolishness going on now. But there's an article, Mark, I want to send you that I'm thinking of a guy named Jay Gillen.
I know Jay Gillen, yeah.
Okay, he sent me an article, and it talked about basically, I think you may have had Jonathan Kozol on your program, too.
He's been on the show before, yes.
Yeah, but the biggest factor affecting achievement for children is parents working. And right now, one time we were saying it's all the parents' fault, all the teachers' fault. I mean, then we said all children's fault. Now it's all the teachers' fault. But we need parents working. Parents working, and this is backed up by empirical evidence. All the others is anecdotal. But when parents work in the communities where parents are working, schools are better, children achieve, children want to go to school, and the whole community has a desire to do better. And that's what has changed over the years. When you guess, I didn't hear the whole story, but when people came from the South, when a lot of African Americans came, they were looking for a better life. So they made my parents third grade education, father, eighth grade education, mother. But they made us do homework. They made us go to school. They told us school was our job. But
right.
they were striving for it, and the community was safe. We weren't rich. We were my father was unemployed on and off. But he was a hustling guy, you know, who worked on cars, did anything to keep his children fed and going to school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's what has changed. We have communities where I'm a teacher in the Northwest area where we have parents. I can go through a lot of, but basically, I would estimate, and this again is, I don't have any evidence, but most of the parents are not working, so they're sending their kids to school is just like getting them out of the house. They have no desire, and the kids feel that, in the classroom. So teachers can't overcome that.
Right.
I mean, they can overcome some of it, but it's, you know, some things you just can't overcome when you spend 5 to 6 hours with a child trying to educate them, because the behavior problem is the biggest thing. And that's one of the biggest things, I'm talking a lot, but the biggest thing the contract didn't address was this behavior, getting the behavior under control.
Joe, appreciate the thoughts.
You know, thank you for calling, Joe. I'm glad that you mentioned that. I think there's a lot of issues here. This isn't really beat up on the teacher, so you might have heard the latter part. But what we talked about is family. What we talked about is community. We talked about people working together in those kinds of instances. And I've encouraged people who are not working traditionally, there are still many ways in which you can educate yourself. The one thing that's exciting to me is that I'm at the library a lot. way much. You know, a lot of times we just need to be in environments where we want to be better, where we want to improve in certain areas, what I shared in the article is that my grandmother, although she did graduate from high school, my grandfather did not. My grandmother became friends with all the teachers. She also was allowed to purchase the textbooks, and she was able to sit in the class when she couldn't understand geometry. So even though she did not work traditionally, she was working, being a part of the educational process, because it is a process. Not everyone is going to have the educational background or the economic possibilities right now to be able to work outside of home. But if we realize how much is important that we engage our families and we work with teachers and we work with administrators, I mean, you think about it, makes a big difference when they see your parent walking through the halls. It makes a big difference when they see your parent on the field trips. It makes a big difference when they see your parents at the PTA meetings, involved in the cookie sales and all those things. Things we used to take for granted. Things we used to minimize and say, oh, she has too much time on her hands. She needs to get a life. These are the things that really matter, not just to our children, but also to the teachers and administrators, because we have to show support in these institutions so that they can grow even in the midst of challenging times.
Now, one of you talking about your grandmother, she was it was your grandmother, right, who was very upset with, or was your mother, who was very upset with the road that you took.
Yes.
Might have been in school with you, but.
Yes, yes. My mother was not.
Where was your common sense, girl?
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's exactly what she said. I can't believe you want to be at home with the white women. That's what she told me. That's what she said. Like I guess Miss Brady or somebody. But what it is that because for her, she wanted to see where my education would take me financially. She wanted to see where my education, what opportunities it would provide for me that she was not able to, have herself. And it was a very tough road. Believe it or not, on my Facebook page, I've had more than one woman who I went to college with who said, my parents said the same thing. I have a friend in Minnesota, both of her parents are PhDs. And just recently, because she did not get a PhD, did her mother say, okay, I have my PhD, I'm done, I'm not going to live through you. This was just recently, and we are approaching 40. I'm not telling people's age, but I'm just saying. We've been out of college a long time. But it was really, I think it was huge for her mother to admit, but it was also difficult for her to feel good about her choices, because she felt like she did not, quote unquote, do more. Now, she owns a business. She's extremely successful in her family and what her family needed. And we need to have that conversation. What does your family need? Your family may not look like my family, but what does your family need to be at its ultimate level of success? And with five children, daycare, private school was just not a viable choice for us. Even with me working a traditional job, because I had kids with asthma, I had kids with, a series of challenges that I would have to have left my job. One day I counted in 1 week I had, because again, when you have children in the same house, one gets strep throat. They're all about to get strep throat.
That's right.
One ear infection turns into 2 weeks of you being off of work. And most jobs would not allow that right now. I mean, I think really in general.
So that I'm curious about the shift you made to comedy, to being a stand-up comedian.
Oh, this is a great one. This is a great one. Most people don't know this story. My choice to actually do comedy, I have always told humorous stories about my children, humorous stories about my family, humorous stories about my life. I wrote for Parenting Magazine for over a year, and most people would say, oh my gosh, you made me laugh. Oh my gosh, you made me laugh. Well, a friend of mine who's an author said, you know, you really get more respect as a comedic writer by doing stand-up. And I said, you got to be kidding me. You mean you want me to get up there and tell the jokes? Really? And she said, yeah, because writing is what I do. It's a natural extension of who I am. And she said, I dare you. She said, put up or shut up.
Who's doing this, Darren?
She did this. My girlfriend, and who is in Boston now. She might be listening, so I'm not going to say her name. But her husband is, they're great friends of ours. She also has five children. And I had told her what I wanted to do in terms of telling a different story. I think most people have this way that we are, not just as people of color, but as educated people, we're this way. But there are a lot of differences, and there are a lot of things. I'm pretty old-fashioned. I still believe in corporal punishment. You can ask my kindergartner who got in trouble at school. And there are just certain things that I really hold fast to that I think my mother somehow thought I had lost because I didn't do it exactly the way that she did it. But I really believe in telling our story, telling what family is all about, the possibilities in family, the strength, how important that family doesn't even look like what we think. I mean, because I have friends here in Baltimore who my children call aunts and uncles who are not blood relatives that I trust. I trust them to discipline my children. I trust them to engage my children in healthy conversations. And that's because we talk about in the article about creating family, people who believe in what you believe in. And so she dared me because I trust her and she's part of my family. She dared me to enter a contest at Magoobies in
Magoobies is a club in
right. It's a comedy club here in it actually is in Baltimore County. It was at that time in Kearney. It's now in Timonium.
Uh-huh.
And the contest was full. And so I went to the contest in April, which was right around my birthday, and I saw the comics and I said, okay, well, people didn't bite. They didn't boo them. They didn't throw anything at them. So maybe I can do this. And so I entered in May and I won.
You won.
I won my first time on the mic. I think it was beginner's luck.
I don't think so.
But since then, I really want to take what it is that I do in my life and I take it to the stage.
So see, since I know that your comedy is not laced with profanity. You don't do that on the stage, right?
No profanity, no vulgarity, no obscenities. We call it clean comedy. And that also is very different because people call me, a storytelling comic or people say, oh, gosh, here she comes. She's going to talk about her family again. But you know what? I make it so that people can relate. People can relate to sassy kids and nagging parents and all the other things that happen to us on a day-to-day basis.
So you could probably do any routines on the air here with us, and we could
you know what? I could tell a whole bunch of jokes, Mark, but we don't have that kind of time.
Well, we could have started that way.
We could have started talking about jokes. Like, we can talk about jokes all day long. I mean, I talk about little things like my daughter, my 16-year-old's on Facebook, and I don't know if she's listening. A lot of her friends have heard this joke because I do it all over town. But she was on Facebook, and she got mad at me because her grandparents had given her some money, and she had left her ATM card in my purse. And I went to New York without giving it to her because I forgot. It's not my responsibility, right? It's her money. And she got on Facebook and put on her Facebook status, my mom took my grandparents' money to New York, and now I don't have money for the movies, and she sucks. Ugh, share.
Oh.
Yes, she did do that. And I got on my Facebook status.
Uh-huh.
I was like, Sean, in New York, at the Prada store, with daughter's money. She's on punishment for back-talking on Facebook. Holla, share. And I got 2 likes right off the top.
Not from your daughter.
Not from my daughter, but from a whole bunch of parents who were like, yeah, stick it to her. I tell parents, don't be punks. Don't let these kids punk you. You better have a phone smarter than your kid's phone. Don't let that phone be smarter than you, because you can track them. You can find out where they are when they're skipping school. You better get a smartphone. Stop getting that flip phone. I hate it when my friends pull out these old antiquated phones looking like a remote control. I'm like, stop that. Put that phone away. Get your Android. Get your iPhone. Do something.
So tell us where you're going to be performing again. Give us your list, your rundown.
Right, my rundown. You can catch me this Wednesday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. The doors open at 7:15. Show starts at 8. That is at Magoobies Joke House. That's on Deer Cove Road. I think I don't want to give the wrong address. It is on Deer Cove Road in Timonium. I'm also going to be at the Comedy Factory, and I have complimentary tickets. I'm not sure when we're going to give them away on the show, Mark, but I have complimentary tickets to my show at the Comedy Factory Saturday at 11 p.m. The Comedy Factory is on Light Street, right above Burke's Restaurant in the Inner Harbor. So you can catch me at both of those places coming up this week.
Now, I guess what you can do, if you don't call in here while we're on the air, and we'll take down your name and we'll give them to Sean so she can have your name at the door for those complimentary tickets. You can also just write to me at marketsteinershow.org. And if you say that you heard this show when Sean Spencer's on the air, that we can give her your names and we'll put those tickets by the door for you to go to the comic club this Saturday night. Is that what it is?
Yep, Saturday night at 11 p.m. So just mention Mark Steiner and you and Especially if you have family coming in from out of town, make them watch those kids. You can go out and have a good time at the Comedy Factory.
Saturday night, 11 o'clock.
Yes, Saturday.
The late show.
That's the late show. So the that means show. You don't have any excuse. You'd have gotten all the, got all the turkey, the ham, the macaroni and cheese. It should be down to the bare minimum by Saturday. Come on out. Hang out at the Comedy Factory. Complimentary tickets for all you guys who call in.
Sean Spence, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been great. Attach to the Urbanite and go to our website, soundshow.org. You'll see where she's playing, where she will be tending the family tree, Urbanite Magazine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And I have to tell you this. Support for WEAA is provided by Chef Max Louisiana Cuisine, available for catering for all holiday parties and special occasions. Open Monday through Thursday, 12 to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, 12 to 9 p.m. Located at 4311 Hartford Road. For more information, 410-319-6227. That's 410-319-6227. Stay with us. Ethel Ennis is on her way through the door with Shodike. Can you imagine that combination on stage? Well, we'll hear about that and talk about that next hour. Stay with us.